Shalom, welcome to Ask JTF, the program in which we attempt to answer questions from our great JTFers. I'm Chaim Ben Pesach from the Jewish Task Force. This is going to be a very special program because this is the one-year anniversary of a hilltop community that JTF has been financing. Very important milestone for us, and we're going to explain to you exactly what we've done there and why it is so important, why we're literally changing history on the ground in Yehuda v'Shomron, in Judea and Samaria. But before we get to that big story, this program is dedicated to a refuah shlema, a complete recovery, for Sharon Mitman, Elsie Friedland, Shlomo Ben Sara, and Dorit Bat Sara, and to Ilui Neshamot, Elevating of the Souls, for Malka Bat Meir, Allegra Bat Meir, Elizabeth Friedland, Erwin Friedland, Myron Friedland, Daniel Nankin, Victor Chazdai, Pesach Seh Ben Dov, Lonita Adler, Shifra Hoffman, Reuven Hoffman, Barry Hoffman, Harab Meir Kahana, Harab Benjamin Kahana, Tzipora Fegi Bat Liba, Yosef Ben Meir, Robert Mitman, Dennis Shore, Helen Friedman, and Charles Zolot. Yes, this is a very important time for us because recently we celebrated the one-year anniversary of a very important hilltop community in a very strategic area in Binyamin. And the name of the hilltop community is Ramat Migron. And we're going to tell you the story of Ramat Migron on this program and how JTF has made a difference and how our great JTFers who are supporting us and who are helping us fund the hilltop youth have made a great difference there. First of all, 1 year ago before Ramat, or a little bit over a year ago, before Ramat Migron came into existence, what you had there were the ruins of what had been a Jewish settlement called Migron. There was a Jewish settlement called Migron, and the Israeli government of Benjamin Netanyahu and the Likud, not the left, the phony right, Benjamin Netanyahu and the Likud, destroyed the Jewish settlement of Migron. And the Arabs came in immediately, and the Arab Muslims came in immediately and started taking over the land, grazing there, and taking control of the land. And this was a very important strategic high point. If you control the high points in Judea and Samaria, you control strategically the area. You're in control of the area if you have all of the high points. And so all the high land. And so they were taking over this and building in their three Arab villages there with a total of, with tens of thousands of Arabs living in those villages. And those Arabs were spreading out and taking over, and there'd be no way, I mean, this was in effect becoming pure Arab territory, pure Arab Muslim territory. No Jews could even go near there. That was what was happening before, a little bit over a year ago. What happened was a Jewish couple, a brave Jewish couple, 20-year-old and his wife, 20-year-old man and his wife the same age, with a 1.5-month-old baby girl, decided to move into that area. Just a Jewish couple. And they had some young Jewish men who came in also to support them and to help with the grazing and with the other activities that you need in order to run a successful hilltop. So they came in, they put up a tent, a simple tent, and you know, it's almost impossible to survive with, during the year, during the winter, you can't survive there with just a tent. And in the brutal hot, sometimes the summer can be brutally hot there also. You can't, a tent is not enough, but they were going to start with a tent and then they were going to hopefully build more. They didn't know if they were going to be able to succeed and be able to survive against the odds. And they had a very simple little hut that they built for the yeshiva students, for the young men who had come in also to assist in what they did. And they had a few sheep and goats with them for grazing, and that was it. And they had like a 20-year-old car, and that was all they had, and almost no furniture, no electricity, no water, no running water, nothing. So what'd they do for water? They got cans. They call them jerry cans. And they got cans and filled them up with water and put them in the back of the car and would go back and forth several times a day to a nearby settlement, to one of the established settlements, drive back and forth in order to bring water, and it was never enough. I mean, it was just, they were in really bad shape. And even bringing food to the settlement was a problem. So, I mean, they you know, they have to feed the animals, of course. So this seemed to be against the odds. It seemed like an impossible dream. It seemed absolutely impossible. Baruch Hashem, they on their own, before JTF came into the picture, they on their own did raise enough money in Israel to build a home for themselves, to take down the tent and build a home. It was a primitive one-room home, but it was better than a tent. At least they have some protection from the weather and the elements. And to build something a little bit better for the young men that were there helping them. And they tried to increase the number of animals they had, but it was a very rough situation, because you imagine several times a day having to drive back and forth an hour each way, you know, an hour total, driving half hour each way just to get basic water and fill up cans with water, and it's never enough. You don't have enough water for showers and certainly drinking. You don't have enough water, and you're not going to drink that water, and so you have to buy bottled water, and then you have and then you need water for showers, and you need water to for dishes and cleaning and other stuff. What are you going to do? So it's by the way, things like a refrigerator or air conditioning or fans or a dish or dishwasher, forget about, or even a washing machine to do laundry. Those are dreams. Those were impossible dreams that they didn't even think was in the realm of possibilities. Even those were like the impossible dreams. But they were little by little trying to make improvements and trying to raise money and trying to appeal to the Jewish people to support them, because when they came in there, in that spot where they came in, that stopped the Arabs from continuing to progress toward the Jewish areas to take over Judea and Samaria. The massive Arab building which is taking place, where the hilltop youth are, the Arab building stops. That's the borderline. That's where they have to stop. And that's where it's Jewish territory. Even though the Israeli government doesn't recognize it, but in practical terms on the ground, the Arab building stops there, and it becomes Jewish territory again. So they wanted to stay there at all costs, and they had a very rough time. And then just to make enough money to put food on the table, because they were starving, just to make enough money to put food on the table, this 20-year-old guy would go out and got a construction job in Jerusalem, was working on a construction site all day. So he's working on a construction site all day, taking care of the animals, running back and forth several times a day to bring water to the community. All of this, I mean, just not getting enough sleep, working day and night, and it seemed like an impossible situation. Really seemed impossible. Then JTF comes into the picture last summer. Okay, we came into the picture about 2 months after the creation of this community. We became aware of how desperate the situation was to stop Judea and Samaria from becoming a PLO independent Nazi terrorist state. That would be a dagger in the heart of Israel. That would be national suicide, God forbid, for the Jewish people. That would bring Israel to boundary lines that are only 6 to 9 miles wide. We realized that this was a desperate situation now. And although we always supported the Hilltop Youth, we decided we're going to do now 100% of all the money we raise, everything we do is going to go for this. This is going to be our project. We're going to make this our baby. This is going to be our project, because no one else took this on. There's no other organization outside of Israel that has taken on this cause. None. So JTF went into action on this issue. And here's what we have since then now. They have horses. They have dozens of sheep and goats and animals that do grazing all over. They graze on 500 acres of land that are now off limits to Arab illegal building and to the Arabs in general. 500 acres they have now. Another Jewish family came in, so there are now two Jewish families there with children, and more young men to come in to assist them that are living there as well to assist them. They have Torah study every day. They have Torah study. In addition to working the land, they've got to, they have to study the Torah, and they have to know what it says in the Torah, in the Bible, in what Judaism teaches. They learn. They have Torah study every day. And they have paved roads now. They didn't have any paved roads. You know what it's like without paved roads? I think I described on prior programs that they were walking knee-deep in mud every time it rained. They'd have to walk knee-deep in the mud. Now they have the paved roads are not with gravel. They're not fancy. They're not the type of paved roads we'd like to give them because we just can't afford to. They're roads with little rocks and stones, but they're roads. But they're roads. They're like country roads. If you've ever been to the country and you've seen sometimes country roads, it's like country roads, but they're paved roads. So they're not knee-deep in mud anymore. And they have pickup trucks. And very soon they're going to be getting a relatively new pickup truck because they must have a relatively new pickup truck to bring in reinforcements in the case of an Arab terrorist attack, God forbid. And they have drones. Just yesterday, the Arab Nazis stole three horses from another hilltop community. How do you find the Arabs? Well, they have drones that can see vast, great drones. These drones are fantastic. And it cost us like about $2,000 to get them a drone that sees over miles and miles and just with tremendous accuracy and precision. It's just fantastic, some of the things, some of the gadgets that exist today. So we got them drones. They have two drones now which they're using, and so they're going to track down those Arab Nazis who stole the three horses. They have wooden homes, and they have solar panels for heat and for cooling now. They still don't have electricity, which we still want to get them. On this particular hilltop, they don't have electricity. On other hilltops, they do have electricity. We've assisted other hilltops that have had problems as well. But on this particular hilltop, they still don't have electricity because they're far away, and the electricity is a little more expensive here because it's a long connection that has to be made, so it's more expensive. But we're working on that. And they have a tractor with a huge tank for water. They don't have to run back several times a day to get water. They have a huge tank. Even with the huge tank, they run out of water, especially when they're giving showers to the kids. They run out of water, because the children are the most important thing to them. But the huge tank with the huge tank gives them, I think if I'm not mistaken, it's 540 gallons of water. Now they only have to go once every 2 or 3 or 4 days, depending on how much water they use. Once every couple days or once every few days, they have to go now to refill. And they have a weekly column in the Shabbat newsletter that reaches most of the Jews in Judea and Samaria. That reaches, the Shabbat newsletters reach hundreds of thousands of religious Jews in Israel. And on Shabbat, there's nothing you can't watch TV or go on the computer or do anything else on Shabbat. So people read those newsletters. Those newsletters are widely read, and they are in the best newsletter in Israel. The best newsletter in Israel is Olam Katan. That's the best. That's the most prestigious, the best, the most professional that's put out there. That's the one that, where the good writers are. And this guy from Ramat Migron, he writes a beautiful, magnificent weekly column, moving weekly columns. I just wish our people on the forum understood enough Hebrew to see the beautiful columns you could get, because we reproduce the columns on Hayamin.org. Hayamin.org is our Hebrew main page. If you could go to our Hebrew main page and you could read it in the original Hebrew, you'd see how well this guy writes. Now he's 21 years old. He writes so well and so moving, and it's just it makes you want to go out there and live on the hilltop yourself after you finish reading the magnificent stuff that he writes. And so they have the strategic high land now, 500 acres, and they are blocking the Arabs from connecting north to south, east to west. They wanted to connect and make one big Arab area which would be Judenrein. Judenrein means Jew-free. That was the Nazi concept, Judenrein. They want to make one big Arab area that's Judenrein. This community is blocking that. And there's another hilltop community nearby, which we've also assisted, of course, which we've also provided substantial funding to. Another hilltop community nearby that's also blocking. And in fact, there are dozens of them all over Judea and Samaria, and they're on the high ground. They look at the Arabs down below. They're on the high ground. Now, they're still fighting against the odds. They still have only two families there, but guess what? Two more families have expressed interest in moving in. We've got to make preparations, and there are things we have to prepare because you have to have more houses and more, and it involves all more solar panels, more water, more all types of things you have to prepare because these are families with women and children. You can't just, you know, you're not just going to leave them hanging. You're not going to leave them in a bad situation there, God forbid. You want to be well prepared when they come. They're not going to live. They're going to live a very rough life, but you want them at least to be able to eat and drink and have basic sanitary conditions and, you know, have basic protection from the elements, from the weather. You want the basics, at least, the minimum. That's all they want, is the minimum, so that they could survive and do what they have to do to save the land of Israel. That's all they're asking for. And so we're working on providing that as well. I hope we get enough funding for it. Because they do want to move in. They want to double the size of this very important hilltop. So that's just what we've done. And that's been in the past 10 months since we got involved full time all the way with this. I mean, we supported the hilltops. We supported the cause of the hilltops for many years. But we got involved full time all the way with our entire budget 10 months ago. And again, they are on that hilltop for 1 year now. And look at what we've done. Now, if they hadn't been there and the neighboring hilltop wasn't there, you'd have a huge swath of land in the most strategic part of Binyamin, choking off all the Jewish communities and Jewish settlements and seizing control of the most important parts of Judea and Samaria on the ground. In other words, creating a Palestinian state in everything but name. God bless these wonderful heroes who are preventing that, who are putting their lives on the line to prevent that, who are sacrificing everything. They're not thinking about, well, I got to get a job and have a good salary and start saving up money and my kids are going to go to college and I'm going to have a good, and we're going to be successful and have a career. They're sacrificing everything, everything, because they love the land of Israel and love the Jewish people. And because they believe that we, as a people, are required to do this. We're required to save the land of Israel from a terrible, terrible tragedy that will occur if the Arabs, God forbid, take over. And so they're doing what they're supposed to do and what every Jew should do. All of us should be there. All of us should be, all the Jews should be on those hilltops and should be wherever they have to be in order to save the land of Israel. That's what we're all required to do. But at the very least, we should be supporting these great heroes. Don't you want other Jewish families to be able to move into these hilltops? Don't you want them to have electricity on every hilltop? Don't you want them to have all the equipment they need to expand beyond 500 acres so that they could eventually make it thousands of acres that they're taking over, where the Arabs are unable to build illegally? Don't you want them to have even better paved roads and more paved roads? We also, what we did is, these two hilltops on Binyamin, we connected them with one of the main established settlements by paving a road to it, and we paved a road to the Jordan Valley, to the hilltops on the in the settlements in the Jordan Valley. So they're all now connected with paved roads that are Jews, that are run by Jews, that are in Jewish territory now. JTF paid for that. And all of this, I'll tell you right now, it's been 10 months, and all of it, it cost us about $500,000 altogether. And it hasn't been easy. It hasn't been easy for me either, because, you know, I've been running like crazy, working day and night, and sometimes not getting enough sleep, even though I believe sleep is essential to good health. And you know, I'm an old man. I'm 65 years old now. You know, so my shoulder went. I now have what's called frozen shoulder, which is very painful, and can take sometimes a year and a half to to end that. I have frozen shoulder, my arm hurts, and you know, because I'm not, you know, I don't sleep comfortably because of that, because of my shoulder, my arm. Because we're all, you know, working over hours and overtime in order to do this. But our spirits are high because we know how important this is. And we know what a wonderful gift this is that Hashem is giving us to be part of this. To do this for the Jewish people and for the land of Israel. What a gift this is. This isn't the bluff that you have in all the other Jewish organizations. This is for real. And it's such a gift and it's so magnificent. I can't believe that there are people out there who don't support this. And I mean, I don't mean just support it in their heads, but I mean financially, who are not, who don't come out and say, you know, I'm going to do whatever it takes, I'm going to support you. I mean, yes, absolutely, this is very important. I can't believe there are people that don't want to do this. I mean, this is, to me, is the ultimate purpose in life. This is really, this, we have to support and love our families and our loved ones, yes. But after we've provided for our families, this should be our cause. This should be like our extended family. These heroes should be like our extended family. We should adopt them and say, you know what? You're like our extended family. And, you know, there are people with resources that sometimes see these programs. And I just want to say to those people with the real resources, because you have some people that are very wealthy that may be seeing these programs and that give to all types of causes other than this is the cause, the premier cause of our generation. Settling the land of Israel, preventing a Palestinian state, preventing Israeli national suicide. How could there be anything more important? I consider this and preventing Iranian nuclear bomb building. I think those are the two issues that really threaten Israel literally with destruction, God forbid. And these two issues, I mean, these are the premier issues. Now, in the Iranian nuclear situation, there's not much we could do. We have a video in Hebrew, which we're advertising, and which has hundreds of thousands of views, over a quarter of a million views. I think the last time I checked was over a quarter of a million views. We have a video which urges action against the Iranian nuclear program, and that's the best we can do, is just have a video urging this. But there's not much more we can do beyond that. But in this area, we can do much more. We can do much more. And you know, when people do the right thing, God sometimes saves the whole Jewish people because of the few that do the right thing. Because God is a merciful God and a loving God, and He wants to save us. He loves the Jewish people. And for His name's sake, He also, for His name's sake, for Kiddush Hashem, to sanctify His name, He wants to do this. So we can give God the excuse, quote unquote, that He needs to help the whole Jewish people if we only do what we're supposed to do. I hope that people will see this and will understand that your support makes a big difference. This is the one cause where you really make a difference. Really make a difference. There are two ways that you can help the Hilltop Youth. You can go to our Hebrew main page, hayamin.org, and on top you'll see a donate button in English. Most of the page is in Hebrew, obviously. It's a Hebrew page. It's our Hebrew web page. But there is a big donate button on top in English. And you click on that button, and in several minutes you can very conveniently donate to the Hilltop Youth. That's online. And if you want to help with checks or money orders through the regular mail, you just send a check or money order to JTF, make it out to JTF, and send it to JTF PO Box 650327, JTF PO Box 650327, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365, Fresh Meadows, New York, 11365. Oh, I have never been prouder in my life than to support these wonderful people. And I'm so proud of them. And they make me proud to be a Jew. They make me proud to be a Jew. I was always proud to be Jewish, but they really make me proud to be a Jew. What wonderful, idealistic, selfless, dedicated human beings. What a magnificent example for the world of what a light unto the nations and a holy nation and a nation of priests is supposed to be. Now we're going to get to our questions from our great JTFers. And we start out with Hidavatsky Noachide, who is always asks great questions. And Hidavatsky Noachide writes, and I quote, Rabbi Wiener rules in the Divine Code, second edition, page 489, that sexual reassignment surgery does not change the person's status in Torah law as a male or female. Who promotes transgenderism and why? Okay, great question, of course, as always. Of course not. Of course, if somebody goes to surgery and tries to become a male, a woman tries to become a male, they try to sew a penis on a woman, or they remove the penis from a man and try to create surgically create an artificial vagina on him. I mean, so sick, so sick, so unbelievably sick. Why would anybody do this to themselves? Why would anybody do this to their children? You have parents who want to give drugs to their children when they're 5 years old and tell them you're not a little boy, you're a little girl, and prepare them for surgery so they try to turn them into little girls. I mean, why would anybody do this? What a demented, evil thing to do. Anyway, of course, the person will still be judged as a male or a female, and you're not really changing your sex. You're just mutilating yourself. You're just mutilating your body in a very sick way. Now, the question of Hidavatsky is, who promotes transgenderism and why? It's promoted by evil people that don't want morality and don't like morality or God or rules. They want to throw off all rules. And so, of course, you have the so-called gays that promote this because they want justification for their abnormal behavior. And their behavior is abnormal. Their behavior is not normal. The pieces of the puzzle don't fit. Okay? Look at the simple anatomy of a human being. Male and female, that fits. The pieces of the puzzle fit. Male and male, it does not fit. Female and female does not fit. It's abnormal. It's insane. And that's why males who have sex with each other have get AIDS and all these other diseases and live such miserable, horrible lives. This is completely perverted. This is absolutely out of touch with nature, with the way God created us, with everything that you see in nature. And so, But the so-called gay people, of course, they want to promote this because they want to feel like what they're doing is normal, even though it's not. And by the way, they'll never be happy. They'll never be gay. They'll never be happy living this type of lifestyle. You can't be happy living this type of lifestyle. You cannot be happy when you're in rebellion against God. Never. You will never have true happiness. And of course, aside from that, you have people who are not themselves gay, but they support the agenda of transgenders and all this other insanity because they know that through this they can destroy all morals or religious beliefs or spiritual beliefs, that they can create a society where there are no rules. A man says, I want to identify as a woman. A woman says, I want to identify as a man. In a society like that, there are no rules. You have people identifying as animals saying that I'm really a dog. I'm really a cat. I'm really a cucumber. You have people like that. I'm serious. You have people that are saying this now, that this is, in other words, completely. And these are the people, by the way, who will say that those of us who believe in the Bible are divorced from reality. That we're the ones that are that don't see the world realistically. They always used to say, you know, you still have some people who say this, anti-religious people, and even the scientists at one point used to say this hundreds of years ago. They used to say, only believe what you can see. You can't see it, don't believe it. It's nonsense. You can't see it with your own eyes, don't believe it. Now we know that we don't see. We don't see everything with our own eyes. We know that there are microscopic creatures that make up the world. Even the air, even in the air, you think that there's nothing in the air. It's all empty. It's just air. It's not. It's filled with molecule, with billions and billions and billions, trillions of molecules. And the complexity of the world, in its tiniest form and in its vast form, with the huge, as even as the atheist Carl Sagan used to say, there are billions and billions of galaxies. He used to say, that was his famous statement: billions and billions of galaxies. There are the vastness of the world, and then the tiny, from the vastness of the world to the tiniest, most complex molecular structures. And people want to believe that this just all happened by chance, or just is just there for no reason, and that there's no mind behind any of this. If there's no mind behind any of this, how is it that we have minds? How is it that we're able to create if we weren't created by a creator with a mind? If we were created by a creator with a mind, the creator that created the universe and all the complexity in the universe, all the complexity in human body, all the complexity in our thinking mechanisms and everything else, this creator is all powerful. Not to see this is really crazy. It really is insanity. It's just insanity. And transgenderism is rebellion against that, and just a complete descent into utter insanity. And they want that. The Hollywood people, the media people, they want insanity. They want insanity because this gives them a license to do everything they want to do, and they become the big bosses, and their ego dominates, and they're the ones who tell everybody else what to do, and they have control over everything. It's easy to control people who are sick, who are mentally ill, who are sick, who themselves are out of control. Homosexuals, transgenders, it's easy to control a society that tolerates that. And that's what they want to create, a society like that, and that's why we have to stop it and fight it, and fight for Torah truth and biblical truth, and fight for what Hashem commands us to do. Thank you very much, Hidovatsky. And we now go to Ram 770. I'm going to quickly read this in Hebrew, and then we're going to translate it, and we'll only take a couple of minutes. Shalom Chaim Hayakar, Ma Shalomcha. Shamati et harayayon shelcha im Alex. Ze haya achla vechidashta li meod meod devarim ani meod huftati lera'a minatan Sharansky shehaya כפוי טובה, זה היה מעניין מאוד. וחיים, אם משה פייגלין ניסה ליצור איתך, לקפוע איתך, או ינסה, אני חושב שאתה מתכוון לומר ינסה ליצור איתך, ולקפוע איתך רעיון אצלו בישראל מחר, וגם הרב ארז שחר ניסה ליצור איתך קשר, לקפוע איתך רעיון, לא הגפת לו, מה דעתך? אוקיי, אני מבין מה אתה שואל. Let me answer Ram first, and then I'll translate. Ram says that he saw my interview. It was in Hebrew, an interview with Alex, who has a website with hundreds of thousands of views, and he does interviews with all types of political figures and leaders and professors. And he interviewed, for instance, yesterday he interviewed Ehud Olmert, who was the Prime Minister of Israel at one time. He just did an interview with him. Anyway, he did an interview with me several days ago, and he put the interview up this weekend, and it was an interview on what we did for Soviet Jewry, what we did in the JDL for Soviet Jewry. Alex himself is from the Soviet Union himself, was originally from the Soviet Union, and it's an interview in Hebrew, and Ram said that he was very impressed with the interview, and that he thought it was a great interview, and he learned a lot from it. And Ram wants to know now if Moshe Feiglin contacts me, because Moshe Feiglin wants to interview me, and if this Rabbi Erez Shachar contacts me, what do they do? He says that I didn't answer Harav Erez Shachar. I didn't answer him because I haven't seen him contact. I don't know where he contacted me. I don't know how he contacted, but I haven't seen it. But anyway, he wants to know what to do. Okay. Kamuvan Ram, kimo she'amarti lecha harbe pe'amim, אני כן רוצה להתראיין אצל משה פייגלין וגם אצל הרב ארז שחר, וכמובן אנחנו רוצים את זה. ורם, הרעיון שאתה מדבר עליו עם אלכס, שוב, כמו שאמרתי בתוכניות הקודמות שלנו, הרעיון שלנו עם אלכס זה בגללך. What I just told Ram is that he's the one who gets credit for the interview. He's the one who set up the interview for me with Alex. He's the one who got in touch with Moshe Feiglin to get Moshe Feiglin to want to interview me. So we're getting interviews and we're able to speak about a lot of issues, and that's thanks to the efforts of Ram. And I want to thank him. Ani mudeh lecha Ram al hakol, bemet. And now we go to our other good friend, Binyamin Yisrael, who writes, one, discuss the following kings of Jordan. And then there are four kings listed here. King Abdallah the First. Well, he was a king when they went to war in 1948 against Israel to push the Jews into the sea and promising to exterminate the Jewish people. So a very evil person. And all the Jews insist he was moderate. He was a peacemaker. He sent the Jordanian army, which was called the Arab Legion, into war against Israel with orders on them. They had orders on them, written orders on them, to slaughter every single Jew. And if Israel had lost that war, that's exactly what would have happened. And the next is King Tal. King Tal was there for in the early 1950s, and he, at that time, he was also calling for Israel's destruction and promoting terrorist attacks against Jews. King Hussein, another beast, he was the king when we had the 1967 Six-Day War. And he was actually king for several decades. He was king and did everything he could to destroy Israel. Promised in the Jordanian media over and over again that they would destroy Israel. And he worked with Saddam Hussein. He worked with Nasser when Nasser said he was going to push the Jews into the sea. He was working with the PLO until they turned on him because there's no honor among thieves. Just scum, the lowest scum. And all the Israelis will tell you he was a man of peace. Oh, what a generation we have. How stupid can people be? And next, King Abdallah the Second, who is currently the king of this phony country called Jordan. King Abdallah the Second, also, there's not one initiative against Israel in the UN or international initiative or attempt to pressure Israel that King Abdallah is not involved in trying to undermine Israel. And without Israel, he wouldn't survive in power for 5 minutes, and yet the crazy Israeli government keeps him in power, and all he does is try to undermine Israel. Also, complete insanity. And by the way, the country I said, the phony country of Jordan. Jordan is not a real country. It's an artificial country that was created by the British Nazi by the British Nazis. A country that has no right to exist. Jordan is part. The entire nation of Jordan is part of the land of Israel, that belongs to the Jewish people. God, who created the world, said that all the land from the Nile to the Euphrates belongs to the Jewish people, and Jordan certainly belongs to the Jewish people. And now Binyamin writes, discuss the following four NBA players and one black noisemaker, and then we have Shaquille O'Neal, Hakeem Olajuwon, Muslim from Algeria, from Nigeria, Dennis Rodman, the NBA player with all kinds of piercings and crazy fake hair colors, and LeBron James. Binyamin, I don't know many details about these black giraffes. These are black giraffes. You ever see a giraffe? Long neck. I mean, I like giraffes. These guys I don't like. But these are rapists and criminals and racists and vermin. But giraffes are actually nice creatures. But these people, they have the body of a giraffe. You know, some of them could be 7 feet tall, and they have the brain the size of a peanut. And they have an IQ in the single digits. And they're always getting arrested for rape or for attacking people or for doing other crazy things. You know, just low life filth, and they, of course, many of them have the Muslim names. They want to be Muslim. They want to be Muslims. He be a Muslim. He a Muslim, brother. So, beyond that, I don't know how many hoops, how many balls they threw through the hoop, and how many retarded, self-hating whites and self-hating Jews who follow them frantically and want to know every last thing they do. I don't know what they're. I'm not interested in what they did. They should be, you know, they should be irrelevant to us because they have no brains and they're promoted day and night by the self-hating whites and the self-hating Jews, and that's the real problem. And finally, Benjamin asks about Snoop Doggy Dogg, who is, of course, the evil rapper. And I read the other day that Snoop Doggy Dogg is 50 years old already. Wow, how time flies. I remember when, you know, when he first started, when he was a kid. But anyway, just a low-life, ignorant, vile purveyor of sewage, of human sewage, and an ignoramus without a quarter of a brain, a complete moron. And white kids, you see white kids going around with the Rastamaster hairdo now. They want to twist their hair and make their hair look like that of the Schwarzes. Just sick. Sick, sick, sick. Sick, sick, sick. Thank you, Benjamin. And we go now to our friend Joe Gutfeld, who writes, Shalom Chaim, what do you think of Jewish singers and actors who have changed their names so it wouldn't sound Jewish, unquote? Joe, obviously I hate people like that. They're evil people. They're ashamed to be Jewish? How can anybody be ashamed to be part of Am Nivchar, of the chosen people? Be ashamed of being Jewish? Just absolutely beyond belief, you know. Even the worst Nazis and anti-Semites want the promise that was given to the Jews. The Aryan Brotherhood claimed they're the chosen people in the Bible, that it really referred to these, you know, drunken methamphetamine-addicted rednecks with an IQ in the minus figures. They claim they're the real people that the Bible speaks about. And the black Hebrews, we be the real Jews. So many of our enemies, our worst enemies, want what this fascinates our enemies, that, you know, that we were chosen by God to have a certain mission in the world. And of course, righteous Gentiles, what they want to do is work together with the Jews, with God's people. The Jews in the land of Israel taking care of Beit HaMikdash, of the Holy Temple and the holy things. And the righteous Gentiles in the next world will be controlling all the nations outside of Israel and running the rest of the world. That's the way the world is supposed to be. But if we're going to have a world based on ignorant jealousy and hatred, and then you have these self-hating Jewish swine in Hollywood and elsewhere, who try to run away from their Jewish heritage, they are the lowest vermin on the face of the earth. Joe writes now, also, you're tired of Democrats and blacks playing the race card. Thanks. Everybody plays the race card now in our society. We don't, but almost everybody does. They're all bowing down. They have a picture of Idi Amin or some other idol, Jesse Jackson or Idi Amin or Barack Hussein Osama, and they burn incest to him and worship them. They worship black racists and Jew haters. That's what we're supposed to do in our society. They worship, we were speaking before about the basketball players. They worship the black giraffes with a peanut-sized brain. They worship these people. Why? Beyond me. Even they don't, the blacks themselves don't understand this. But this is the insanity that we have. We are being told by Hollywood and the media we're supposed to worship blacks. And now this is what we've come to in this country. And by the way, again, I want to make clear, I don't care about the color of someone's skin. I couldn't care less. I'm interested in what Martin Luther King pretended to be interested in. He said he doesn't care about the color of their skin, only the content of their character. That really is my standard. I'm against most blacks because they're anti-Semitic and jealous and racist and ungrateful. And after all the Jews did for them, look what they did. Look how they turned on the Jews. You know, so I'm against most blacks for that reason. I'm not against every single person whose color of their skin is black. If there's a decent black person, if there's a righteous black person, I'm not against them at all. I'm not against people because of the color of their skin. I'm against people because of their behavior. And if they're evil people of any race, I hate them. And if they're good people of any race, we're supposed to support them and we're supposed to view them as righteous people. Thank you, Joe. Great questions. And now we go to our other friend, Yimach Shmo de Islam, who asks a very interesting question this week. Der Chaim, do you think the Harry Potter movies are responsible for the spread of witchcraft? Unquote. Of course they are. People have to believe in something. There's a vacuum in people's lives. They're told you shouldn't believe in God, and they put down God, and they put down religion, and they put down the Bible. People want to believe in something, so what do they believe in? The same people who will tell me that the Bible, despite all the biblical prophecies and the Jewish Bible coming true and the Jews returning to Israel and the miracles and the incredible, obvious fact that the Bible is true, the Jewish Bible is true, despite that, people will say, oh, that's nonsense. They'll say, that's nonsense, even though, is it nonsense that little Israel came into being after 2,000 years? Is it nonsense that the Jews outnumbered 100-1 win these miraculous victories? Is it nonsense that the Jews have indeed rebuilt the land of Israel, the desolate cities have become habitable again? Is that nonsense? Hasn't that been fulfilled? Don't we see the fulfillment of prophecy in our time? And the same people say that's nonsense will have a rabbit's foot on their car, on the window, on the mirror of their car. They'll have a rabbit's foot. Or they'll believe in, or they won't walk, they don't want to go on the 13th floor of a building. Or they won't walk under a ladder. Or they have all these other superstitions. They'll say knock on wood. Or other superstitious stupidity, which we're not allowed to believe in, by the way. You're not allowed to believe in superstition. Or they'll go to people to read their palms, read a cup of coffee. They look at a cup of coffee and read it and say they're going to tell somebody's future. I mean, they're the one, and those are the people who will not believe in the true religious belief, but they'll turn to everything, astrology and every other crazy, insane thing under the sun, they'll turn to. Every other hoax under the sun, they'll turn to. I remember, I think I mentioned this last week already, I hate to repeat myself, but what can I do when you get to be my age, that's what happens. I think I mentioned last week Actually, I was speaking to a group of people and said it. I don't know. It might have been that I was speaking to some people and said it. But I remember once we had a meeting, and I spoke at the meeting. And at the end of the meeting, a woman came up to me and said, "Can I read your palm? I'll tell you what the future is. I'll read your palm." I said, "No, you can't read my palm." She said, "Why not?" I said, "Because I haven't written anything on it." I mean, this is, you know, the absurdity of these people. The absurdity of these people. And of course, there are people who are going to spread witchcraft. And Harry Potter are movies that glorify the concept of witchcraft. What a disgrace that Jewish kids, if Jewish kids watching this, even Orthodox Jewish kids are allowed to watch this as if this is legitimate entertainment. This is not legitimate entertainment. This is teaching people emunat tefillah. Emunat tefillah is superstition. We're supposed to believe in God, not in superstition or magic. Thank you, Yimach Shmo de Islam, for a good question. And now we go to our other good friend, Angry Chinese Kahanist, who writes, and I quote, "Are there any Kahanas in the United States? That is, are there any people related to him here?" Unquote. I don't know if there are. I know that the family that I knew that was related to him all made Aliyah. They all moved to Israel. As far as I know, all of his family lives in Israel. But there may be people who stayed here who never made Aliyah, who never went to Israel. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. Thank you, Angry Chinese Kahanis. Good question. And we go now to our other very good friend, Italian Zionist, who writes, and I quote, "Hi Chaim, one, what are the three least anti-Semitic countries in Europe historically from the Middle Ages till today? I believe Italy and Greece would be among them. Other than World War II, I don't believe there were pogroms in Italy or Greece," unquote. Oh, I don't know. Unfortunately, those two countries don't have a good history in World War II. Italy, of course, under Mussolini, fought together with Nazi Germany and passed the Nuremberg Laws. And Mussolini was an inspiration for Hitler and the Nazis in Germany. As far as Greece is concerned, they have a long history. They also have a long history of anti-Semitism. And I know from my own family, I had family that lived in Greece. I have family that lived all over the countries where the Sephardic and Mizrahi Jews lived. I have family from Morocco. I have family from Mitzrayim. Mitzrayim is Egypt. I have family from Yavan. Yavan is Greece. Turkey. I have family from all the countries. Wherever there were Sephardic or Mizrahi Jews, I had, or in many places where they were, I had family there. Many places where they lived, I had family there. And so I had family in Greece, and, 90% of the Greek Jews were murdered during the Holocaust. The Greeks gladly allowed the Nazis to come in and sometimes turned the Jews in and gladly allowed them to come in and murder all the Jews because they wanted to seize all the property. So, Now, I personally have known Italians and Greeks as individuals whom I was very fond of, including you, Italian Zionist. I know Italians and Greeks on a personal level that I'm very fond of, but I'm just speaking as nations on a national level. But on an individual level, yes, I've met Italians and Greeks who were very good friends of mine and still are very good friends of mine. And now Italian, but who are the least anti-Semitic? I think probably historically, on a historical level, it's probably the Serbs. Maybe also the Czechs. The Serbs and the Czechs. The Serbs never murdered Jews. They didn't murder Jews. And during the Holocaust, they wanted to fight together with the Jews. And the Jews who fought together with them survived. And the same thing with the Czechs. In Czechoslovakia, it wasn't called Czechoslovakia, it was called the Czech Republic. Slovakia, on the other hand, they were together with the Nazis. But the Czechs were not Nazis, generally speaking, and they also did not murder their Jews. So I would say those two countries probably are the ones I would think of. Italian Zionist now writes, and I quote, too, "Are you tired of all these silly questions like, what do you think of Michael Jackson? Many people on here ask questions like they're 12 years old. And no offense to anyone, but who really gives a darn about Croatia?" Okay. You've expressed your opinion, Italian Zionist. I think people have heard it, and I read it on the program, and I think some people might agree with you. Some people don't like those types of questions, I do think that the questions you ask, Italian Zionist, are almost always excellent questions and very interesting questions, and I'm glad that you're here to ask those questions. Thank you, Italian Zionist, and we go now to the great Nachas. Okay, Nachas, by the way, is a Yiddish word. In Hebrew, it's Nachat. It would be Nachat, but in Yiddish, it's Nachas, and we go to Nachas now, who writes, and I who's a longtime great friend of JTF. And Nachas writes, and I quote, "Shalom Chaim, one, your opinion regarding Israel bonds and do they have a significant impact on Israel's economy?" Unquote. It's loaning money to the Israeli government for all types of Israeli government projects. I don't like the Israeli government. I think the Israeli government does a lot of harm. I would not give my money to something that loans money to the Israeli government or Israeli projects. I wouldn't do that because I don't agree with what they do. The Israeli government gives billions to the Arab Nazi enemies of Israel, would never give anything to the Hilltop Youth. They just try to destroy their homes and try to stop the Hilltop Youth from saving us, but our enemies, they give billions to. So I wouldn't give any money to the Israeli government, just like I wouldn't give any money to Uncle Sam. If I pay my taxes, I pay all the taxes I owe because I don't want to go to jail. But if it was up to me, if it was voluntary, I wouldn't give them a penny. I wouldn't give a penny to the federal government. I think the federal government is terrible. I wouldn't give them a penny if it was up to me. But anyway, no, I don't think Israel Bonds is... I'm not saying that you should... If somebody thinks it's a good investment, that's fine. You know, you think it's a good investment, go for it. Because I don't think it's forbidden to invest with them. But I wouldn't do it out of a sense of idealism. It's not an idealistic thing to do. It's just if you happen to need a place to park your money, if you have money and you need a place to park your money and invest somewhere, if you think it's a good investment, fine. I don't know, by the way, if it's a good investment. I don't even know what their yields are. I don't know what their terms are, so I have no idea. But I know you pay taxes on Israel bonds in the United States. But if you think it's a good investment, fine. But I would not do it for that reason. You want to do it, go ahead. But I would not do it. I would not do it because I think it's good for Israel. I don't think it helps Israel. I don't know if it hurts, but I don't think giving money to the Israeli government helps Israel. I think if you want to help Israel, the Hilltop Youth are the way to help Israel. Nachas now writes, and I quote, too, please discuss the following. Okay, we have some names of people here. G. Gordon Liddy. G. Gordon Liddy was, in my opinion, a righteous Gentile. He was arrested in Watergate, with the Watergate scandal, and he did some time in prison. But he was a staunch, genuine supporter of Israel. A real supporter of Israel. Someone who loved Rabbi Kahana, and someone who supported Israel. Someone who invited me on his program very courageously. He had several million, he's passed away since, but he had several million listeners to his radio program. He had a radio program all over the country with several million listeners, and he always was praising Israel, defending Israel, and put me on his show, and was very supportive of everything we were doing in JTF. So I liked G. Gordon Liddy. I liked him. And next is Dinesh Deswauza. I don't even know how to pronounce his name. Dinesh Deswauza. I mean, I know who he is. We've seen him so many times on Fox News and all these other, but I don't know how you pronounce his name. Dinesh Deswauza. He's a Trumpster. He's a Trumpster. I consider Trump to be phony right. I'm not fond of them. There are times when he says things about Muslims and Islam that I think are courageous and good. So I'm not completely knocking him, but Trumpism is not the answer. It's a phony ideology and worshiping of a man who doesn't deserve to be worshipped. That's my opinion. Next is Walter Matthau. Walter Matthau was a Jewish actor who, I don't know if he did anything else for the Jewish people, but I know that one time we had a JDL demonstration and he passed by the JDL demonstration. He pulled out of his pocket $400 in cash and gave it to us. Gave the $400 to JDL. That's the only Jewish thing I know about him. Other than that, I know that he was an actor. I think he was a good actor. And that's the only thing I know about him. John Wayne. John Wayne was certainly... I think John Wayne was a good actor. I think he was very talented. And I think he genuinely loved the United States. I don't know what his positions were on Jewish issues. I don't know if he liked Jews. He certainly came into contact with a lot of Jews because he was doing movies in the 30s, 40s, and 50s when the Jews really did control Hollywood. And when Hollywood was really very talented because of Jewish brains. John Wayne, so he was in touch with a lot of Jews that I don't think were particularly likable people, but I don't know what his position was on Jewish issues, but I do know that he was a good actor and seemed to be, I don't know, seemed to me to be a reasonably decent person, unless there's something I don't know about him. Nachas now asks about Barry Goldwater. Ugh, Barry Goldwater was a sellout, the phony, the big Mr. Conservative, the big super right winger in 1964. He was defeated in a landslide, not because he was too conservative. That's not true. That's what they tried to say. He's an extremist. which was baloney. He was never an extremist. The reason he was defeated in 1964 is because he kept making he kept promising to go to nuclear war with the Soviet Union. He scared the hell out of everybody. He said he's going to lob bombs into the Kremlin's restroom. He kept talking about bombings and nuclear war and bombs, and he scared the hell out of people. So that was the real reason. That I think that was the number one reason why he lost. He scared millions of Republicans voted against him in 64. In the end, he really sold out. He showed what a phony he is. His grandfather was Jewish, Barry Goldwater. That's why he has the name Goldwater. His grandfather was Jewish on his father's side. But his grandson was a Fagala. His grandson was homosexual. And Goldwater, when he found out his grandson's a homosexual, he went out and started defending the homosexuals. And told his grandson, "You fight for it if you believe in it. If you believe in that, then fight for it." What a jerk. I don't like him. And Aaron Klein. No, I don't like Aaron Klein. Aaron Klein is a Bibist, we say in Hebrew. A Bibist means someone who worships Bibi Netanyahu, the disaster. He worked on Netanyahu's re-election campaigns. He was an advisor to Netanyahu. He's a strong supporter of Netanyahu. Catastrophe for Israel. Catastrophe. I don't like him at all. Thank you, Nachas. And we go now to Roy, who asks interesting questions. Roy writes, and I quote, "Hello, Chaim. I wanted to ask what you think about the siren that is heard in Israel during the Days of Remembrance. Would you abolish or preserve this custom?" Unquote. I would prefer if we had Days of Remembrance more in line with Jewish, with Torah traditions. We should remember the Jews, of course, who gave their lives fighting for the land of Israel. We must remember them and honor their memory. And we must honor the memory of Jews who were murdered in Arab terrorist attacks and Jews who died in the wars. We have to honor their memory. No question about it. But the siren is something that we copy from the Goyim. I don't think religious Jews should intentionally ignore it and try to show, we're going to put our finger in your eye, and try to spite people, which is, when this happens, I think that we should be respectful. If this is how the non-religious Jews in Israel want to observe it, I think we should be respectful, because I don't think there's any rule in Judaism against this. So why not be respectful? They want to honor in their own way. They want to honor and remember these people. But I would prefer if we remembered them with more Jewish traditional ways, saying Tehillim for them to elevate their souls, doing mitzvot to elevate their souls, praying for them. I would prefer to do it in a more Jewish way. Roy now writes, and I quote, "Did George W. Bush pressure Israel to expel Jews from Gush Katif, or was he very uninterested in Israel and that this was all 100% Ariel Sharon without even a little American pressure? Thanks." This was 100% Ariel Sharon. Yimach shmo v'zichro shem reshaim yirkav. 100%. They were going to indict Sharon because he was corrupt, because he stole millions of dollars. So they were going to indict him. And to avoid the indictment, he said, "I'll give away Gush Katif. I'll destroy Gush Katif and give everything over to the Hamas terrorists." And that was that. All of a sudden, the courts, the prosecutors all dropped everything and said, no, if you're going to do that, we're going to protect you. They even said openly, he's our etrog. In other words, we're guarding him like an etrog. We're going to guard him and protect him from any criminal charges. In other words, he could have been the worst criminal, and he was. But as long as he's willing to give away land and do things that are harmful to Israel, the establishment in Israel, the left-wing Bolshevik establishment in Israel, loved him and called him their etrog. If you recall, Roy. And this was entirely, in fact, when Sharon sent people to the United States to tell the Bush administration that they were planning to do the expulsion in Gush Katif, Vice President Dick Cheney was at first against it. He said, "Why are you doing it? You shouldn't do this. This is surrendering to Muslim terrorism. This is going to hurt us too. We don't want you to do this." Vice President Dick Cheney initially was against it. And the Secretary of Defense at the time, Donald Rumsfeld, was against it. So two leading people in the Bush administration, Cheney and Rumsfeld, were actually against what they did in Gush Katif. But he went ahead with it anyway. He was, you know, because he wanted to save his own neck, and because he was just an evil, cruel beast. Thank you very much, Roy. And we now go to another very good friend of ours, Confederate Kahanis. It's so good to see you again, Confederate Kahanis. Confederate Kahanis writes, and I quote, Dechayim, what's your take on Johnny Depp and Amber Heard? You know, I don't know too much about the details, but I know that Johnny Depp, for many years, a very famous actor, earned huge amounts of money. He had the perfect life in front of him. And what does he do? He becomes an alcoholic and a drug addict. And represents the decadent culture, the decadent evil culture of Hollywood. With all the money and all the fame and all the success, imagine all the good he could do. Oh, how I wish I had money and fame and success so I could do for the hilltop youth and for good causes. He went around using cocaine and using all types of drugs and becoming a drug addict and becoming an alcoholic. And Amber Heard, she's also a complete, you know, just immoral, evil people. That's what Hollywood is. You know, nowadays you can't get into Hollywood unless you're an evil, immoral person. They won't even give you a job there. That's the way it works now. Confederate Kahanis writes, and I quote, what's your opinion on YouTuber David Wood? Thanks and God bless. I don't know. I've seen some of his stuff, but he's a missionary. He preaches, he preaches and urges people to become Christians, to convert to Christianity. As a Jew, I'm not comfortable when people try to missionize among my people. That I'm uncomfortable about. Even though we want to work together with all righteous people for good causes. And I'm expecting to do an interview, by the way, on which I can't disclose right now the details of it, but I'm expecting to do an interview now on a radio program that has a lot of evangelical Christian listeners. We want to work together with moral, decent people, including people of other religions, if possible, even though we have religious differences. But if people are going to insist that we convert, that's going to cause a problem, and I think that he does that, and that's a shame, because a lot of what he says, some of his videos on Islam and Muslims are good videos, are very good videos. I wish he wouldn't get into the missionary stuff. I think if he wants to be an evangelical Christian, we still have a First Amendment in the United States, as far as I can tell. I don't know how long it's going to last, but we still, for now, have a First Amendment. Let him be an evangelical Christian, but don't try to impose that on other people. You can be whatever you feel you want to be. You have a First Amendment constitutional right to do that, and it's a shame. And again, I feel badly about it because again, his videos on Islam and Muslims, some of them are really good, and he has guts when he the debates he's had with Muslims and some of the things he's done with the Muslims. I've seen some of his stuff. Actually, he's pretty good. So if he would put aside the missionary stuff, I think there'd be a chance we could work together with him. So maybe, I don't know, maybe in the future there'll be a way to do that. Thank you, Confederate Kahanis, and I want to thank everybody for another program of JTF that I very much enjoy doing, as I do every week. We have such a great opportunity to make such a difference. If only we understand why we're in this world, and what our mission is in this world, because all of us have a higher calling. For JTF, until next week, this is Chaim Ben Pesach. Shalom.